Blog Talk Radio.
How about the N-word, though? The N-word's been thrown around.
Black guys use it all the time. Turn on HBO, listen to a black comic, and all you hear is nigger, nigger, nigger. I don't get it. If anybody without enough melanin says it, it's a horrible thing, but when black people say it, it's affectionate. It's very confusing. Don't hang up. I want to talk to you some more. Don't go away.
Is it okay to say that word? Is it ever okay to say that word?
It depends how it's said. Black guys talking to each other seem to think it's okay.
But you're not black. They're not black.
I see. So a word is restricted to race. Got it. Can't do much about that.
I can't believe someone like you is on the radio screwing out the nigger word, and I hope everybody
I didn't
heard
spew nigger, out nigger, the nigger word.
Nigger.
Right. I said that's what you hear.
Heard it.
Yes, they did.
I hope everybody heard it. So what
they did, and I'll say it again.
Got all the Vietnamese in the army camps and shit, taking tests and stuff, learning how to say nigger.
Mr. Nigger.
So they can become good citizens.
Nigger, nigger, nigger.
Like, they got classes, you know they have. All right, let's try again, Trope. Niggle, niggle, niggle. Niggle, 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 niggle. Well, that's close.
We don't care when Richard Pryor or Eddie Murphy say it. Why? Because we know they're not racist.
Nigger, nigger.
They're niggers!
I thought the word nigger the other day. I'm going to tell you this story. And it wasn't racist. It wasn't a race even connotation. Let me tell you what happened. I went to a coffee place. And it was a cool indie coffee. I don't like Starbucks anymore. Because you go there and they don't care anymore. They just press a button and some old lady's diarrhea comes out and they just give it to you. So I go to like a young people cool coffee place. With like my band's playing notices on the walls. And it's called like the Howling Do whatever thing. And the dude behind the counter's got a tight t-shirt and a ponytail. And I was like, hey, can I get a cappuccino? And he goes, like, he's amazed that he could help me. Like, oh, yeah, I got all this stuff right here. That's awesome. And so he starts making my coffee just so he worked so hard. He ground the beans just for that one cup. And put him in the thing and tamped them with his old thing and he'd click, clack, and click, and then he took the milk and he frothed it like for like an hour. And then he banged it on the counter. I don't know why it was awesome. And he scooped it in and put a little cocoa on it. And he's like, here you go, man. And I was just blown away. And for some reason, as I left there, the thought in my head was, that nigger made the shit out of my coffee. I don't know why. He wasn't black. That's just what was in my heart for some reason. Was that the nigger made the shit out of my coffee.
Nigger, nigger, nigger. I ain't trying to preach nothing, no, I'm just talking about my feelings about it. And I don't want them hip white people coming to me calling me no nigger or telling me nigger jokes. I don't like it. I'm just telling you, it's uncomfortable to me. I don't like it when black people say it to me. I really don't no more. It's nothing. It don't mean nothing. So I love y'all. You take that with you.
Nigger, nigger, nigger.
You know what's on my mind right now? It ain't the coffee in my kitchen. It's the dead nigger.
Oh, Jimmy, don't even
worry about it. No, listen to me. Don't think about anything. I want to ask you a question. When you came pulling in here, did you notice the sign up in front of my house that said dead nigger storage?
You know I didn't see no shit.
Did you notice the sign in the front of my house that said dead nigger storage?
No.
You know why you didn't see that sign? Because it ain't there, because storing dead niggers ain't my fucking business. That's why.
I just don't mean shit. Y'all niggers, and you gon' be niggers. Forever, just like us, niggas. You're not niggas.
And the voice said, do you see any niggas? I said, no. And said, you know why? Because there aren't any. And it hit me like a shot, man. I started crying and shit. I was sitting there, I said, yeah, I've been here 3 weeks. I haven't even said it. I haven't even thought it. And it made me say, oh, my God, I've been wrong. I've been wrong. I got to regroup my shit. I mean, I said, I ain't gonna never call another black man a nigger. You know, because we never was no niggers. That's a word that's used to describe our own wretchedness. And we perpetuate it now because it's dead. That word's dead. We men and women, we come from the first people on the earth. You know, the first people on the earth were black people.
Context of white supremacy, Gusty Renegade, Justice and Company, in for another program to continue sharing constructive information on racism, white supremacy, hopefully. We just had a broadcast on today would be Tuesday, March 1st, and we just had a broadcast on Huckleberry Finn, the work of Mark Twain, and it was a very constructive dialogue. I hope we had a lot of people who called in and were listening to the discussion, and it brought back a lot of memories about childhood and classroom experience, and I think it was very constructive, so I wanted to allow for that conversation to continue, so I'm going to add everybody back on the line. I did want to say about that clip, that might not have been the most constructive use of the first 6 minutes or so of the program. But I, since that, I mean, I make my sound clips and stuff, so I might not ever get to play that again. So I at least wanted to get my, my money's worth in terms of investing my time and making it and everything. So it might not have been the most constructive, but I hope it's related because, you know, all of that, I think if I had read Huckleberry Finn when I was more confused, 213 times nigger in the book, I don't think it would have registered. I wouldn't have counted. And I just don't think I would have said, you know, wow, this Mark Twain guy. You know, I don't know about him. I don't think I would have had that frame of mind when I was more confused, just because, you know, you're bombarded by the term and just the confusion and yeah, so just we're all in the same boat, and I didn't remember it until the female caller brought it up, but I was totally in an AP English class. I think there were two other non-white students, and we read this book, and I was very confused, and yeah, I'm trying to remember more about that experience, because it was, I think we read something else that dealt with race, something by Toni Morrison. We read something else on racism, and yeah, it was just really interesting. Anyway. So 2736, your line is open. I think that's D from Reckless 2.0. We have the female caller. We'll have to get your hand. I'm like real uncouth, you know, as a victim. Like, I don't really get into asking people's names and stuff. I was laughing with Tater Pie. I was saying I just reference folks, ma'am, sir, caller. The 4635, your line is open, and you can give us a handle. The person from a blocked number, I'm not sure if 909 and the female caller in Georgia, if you called back in. If you both called back in, make sure you both press 1 so I'll know which line you're on so I can add you because there are a lot of blocked numbers. Thank you. Non-Mighty Wick, your line is open. And Brandy, if you want to try again. Brady, sorry. If you want to try again, we can. It's no worries. Anybody else, if you called in and you want to talk, press 1 and I'll get you a line. Everybody who dialed in with a hand up, your line is open, including Non-Mighty Wick.
You were speaking, Gus, if I can be heard. This is 404 from Atlanta. Did you have to read The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison?
I didn't have to read it. I read it on my own, but we had to read, I think we had to read Beloved.
That was a very confusing book. I'd have to go back and read it again, but I have quite a few of Toni Morrison's books. But I remember reading The Bluest Eyes, and even back then when I wasn't confused, and it just showed you how white identified this child was.
Oh, yeah. That's a phenomenal book. Like I said, and I think I got more clarity about white supremacy, like, and the damage of being white identified. Like, man.
Is Pam back on the line?
I dialed her. I dialed her. I thought I dialed her. I'm not seeing her. I will double check and see if she'll be hanging out. Oh, okay. Yeah. I dialed her. Something happened with her phone, so I'll dial her back. So give us a hot second, and I'll dial her back. Feel free to converse in the interim.
909, are you online?
Yes, ma'am.
Did you have issues as well when you were in school?
I went to private school, black schools. I had a lot of issues with that. I can tell you that. then I went to a public school, but it was off continent. A lot of issues with that. That's when I had white teachers, and didn't like that too much. White female teacher, a history teacher. I remember her basically teaching on Egypt and how she was adamant that they wasn't black people.
Typical.
I mean, it just turned me off to that class. I mean, I hated that class. I just didn't really know exactly how to express to her that Egyptians were black. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I knew it, but I just didn't have the confidence to just challenge her. I wish I did. I think about that a lot, you know, because I write, you know, I have journals from back in the day, and I just remember that coming up a lot, that I wish I had told her, you know, expressed that, you know, that she's teaching a bunch of lies in that class.
She's probably still out there teaching that same mess, all the messing up other non-white students, giving them that false information.
Yep, probably.
Can I be heard?
Yes, I can hear you.
Because I was going to, I had that same experience as 909, actually at the same high school, but I had a white male teacher. Male teacher, and he was teaching supposedly about Egypt and was saying that he wasn't necessarily saying they weren't black, but he was trying to say that they didn't identify themselves as a race or color.
Oh, boy.
He wasn't saying they were black. He was trying to get away from Egypt being black.
White people have...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was about to say that white people have this complex when it comes to Egypt and the high level of civilization that took place over there, and they just don't want to wrap their minds around that non-white black were the originator of that society. They, in order for them to fit comfortably in their sense of white supremacy and to be able to suppress us as a people, they have to think that we did absolutely nothing, because it would justify for them their mistreatment, their continuous mistreatment, and their need to be paternalistic towards blacks and other non-whites.
Speaking of white people trying to act like, you know, black people didn't do anything, I had a teacher, I think it was I don't like to call white people who, you know, are standing up in class, giving instructions, to non-white people, teachers, but you know what I mean. I had a lady who was doing that in like the seventh grade, and she was like the history, you know, history lady that does that. I don't know if it was history or some class, but we had to write a poem or something, and it was homework, so I brought it in, and she basically told me that, you know, nah, you didn't do that, you know, you didn't write this, and she wouldn't accept it, and I had to stay at the class and write another one. You know, I was trying to remember the one I wrote, couldn't remember it all the way, had to come up with another one, and then she gave me like a C on it or something. This is the same lady who was emphatically explaining Manifest Destiny. I remember because it was Texas, so yeah.
Have you guys noticed, speaking of Egypt and the Horn of Africa, where, you know, these people are undoubtedly black, besides the Egyptians, like the Ethiopians and the Nubians, and have you noticed white people say, oh, well, you know, they're not your type of black people, they're not Negroids or whatever that means. In an attempt to say, oh, these are Caucasoid black people, and I'm like, what are you talking about here? Like, you know, anything to try to connect themselves to, or to take black achievement away, to justify mistreatment.
Yes, you are correct in that, and it's been a continuous, ongoing issue with white people. That is why. With what's going on right now with the school system and the tripling up of the classrooms because of them trying to get rid of the teachers' union, we're going to see people who have children in school, you're going to have to take your children out of this school system. We're going to have to find a way to bring this country to their knees, and one of the ways is going to have to be through the school system, the secondary school system. Because it makes no sense that you would turn your children over to the enemy and don't follow up or go back to see what they're teaching your children, because they're destroying the children. That's why when they go off to college, including myself, you're so confused and you become so white identified and you run around crazy.
Has anybody gone to a historically black college?
Nope, I did not.
Well, I was going to say, because I did. I went to Xavier in New Orleans. And the interesting part was the majority of the teachers were...
White,
yeah. They were white, and we weren't really taught about ourselves. We were being primed to basically... you know, go out in the white world. We were told that we had to adapt. And the exact words, actually, a black teacher told us that while we were at the school, we're in a utopia, but in the real world, we had to adapt to white people's ways.
Mm.
We couldn't wear our hair in a certain way. We couldn't talk in a certain way. And this was at a so-called black college.
It is something that I found out living here in Atlanta with all of these HBCUs. That's the AU Center around in Atlanta. The majority of the instructors there, they are white. So in essence, you are still getting a white education at a black school. You're getting some cultural aspect by having all of these non-whites in the classroom. But when you're being instructed by these white teachers, you might as well go to one of those predominantly white institutions. Same thing with Howard.
I think that's
someone
just
called
a program.
I'm sorry?
I said, didn't you do a program on that? White Architects of Black Education?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. He was on Professor Watkins, I believe. I think I'm correct. He was on in...
October,
good memory, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, the person that called in at from a block number with a hand up, your line is open.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, greetings to everyone.
Greetings.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Speaking of white women in Egypt, I was wondering if any of you had heard about the journalist, the white woman, Lara Logan, I think it was, who claimed that she was raped or sexually assaulted while covering the protests in Egypt, and it turned out to be a lie.
Oh, it was? Because I mentioned that on the show this week.
Okay. They admitted it was a lie?
It is?
Yeah, I think it's pretty much come out that it wasn't true. It wasn't actually sexual assault. It was just some sort of harassment in the during the protests, but not actually rape or anything.
You know, I had a feeling it wasn't true because, you know, that's just something that they always tag non-white males with. It's irresistible control for the lust of for any white female that shows up. So I kind of thought it wasn't true.
And she's South African.
Okay.
Well, she is. I knew she was British, but I didn't know that she was a South African.
Sound like she read Mark Twain. They read Mark Twain in South Africa, too. They got that blame the niggas part down pat.
But this same Lara Logan, if you go back and read her history, she was that same journalist who was embedded in Afghanistan, and she became sexually involved with a soldier in Afghanistan, and she became pregnant. That she was not, I don't know if she married to that soldier, but it happened a few years ago.
Hmm. Well, you got a good memory. I never heard anything of her. It's the first time I ever heard her name.
Yeah, she does report for 60 Minutes. Mm-hmm. And she was over there as their correspondent, and she became pregnant with one of the soldiers. I don't know if it was a British soldier or an American soldier, but she became pregnant.
Yeah,
Professor William.
No, I was just going to say, they play the same old game.
Professor William Watkins, his book, The White Architects of Black Education, he was a guest on the program in November. Excellent program, in my opinion. Excellent. He was a lot less confused. He had a lot of good information, too. And he talked about when Robert F. Williams was on Oprah Winfrey. He's pretty non-white male. Excellent, excellent program.
I got the same Egyptian white female that was the history teacher. I remember she told a story about her having to have an operation on her vagina, basically. Sorry, but it was pretty traumatic, man. I mean, I remember thinking about that.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but this teacher said that in a classroom with students.
Yep.
Did you tell your parents what she said?
No, I wasn't living with my parents at the time, but I didn't know what to think. It was just crazy that I just remember her being a very sexualized teacher. She would come to class with these low cut blouses and these tight shorts and. I just remember that one time when she told that story about her having an operation on that, you know, that operation. I just remember me thinking about her, her private parts every now and again. Just wondering, like, yeah, just picturing her private parts being operated on. It was crazy. I was like, yeah.
What grade were you? What were you in when this happened?
10th grade.
Yeah, that's a good age. I remember when I was in high school, there was always a couple of white female teachers, one in particular, that was having sex with the male students. And I bet if you talk to a lot of black males in high school age, I bet you they can remember a white female teacher or somebody in the school who was rumored to be having sex with black boys. I don't know. Maybe you guys can't, but I know I've heard of it.
Mary Kay Letourneau, right here in Seattle.
That's all I was just about to say her name.
Because I said, Doug, she'd make an excellent guest, Brad, since she's right in your neck of the woods.
So she was probably trying to titillate the male students, perhaps. If she's talking about her body parts, she might have been trying to titillate you.
She She should have been reported to the principal, because that's very, very improper for you, a teacher, to be saying something like that in front of a classroom of male students.
Probably would have got away with it, though, because American Letourneau is still abusing her student today.
She's married.
They got married. Yeah, they got married. After she got out of jail, two times. I think she went to jail twice over that, and then still got married. Like, that is, man, only under white supremacy.
Has anybody ever been on white-history.com?
No.
No.
Okay. Well, that particular white website is, well, supposedly about white history. And they have a whole chapter that says Chapter 8, Egypt, Nordic Desert Empire. And they're pretty much saying that Egypt was white in their the way they explain it.
They have stolen every bit of history that they have stolen. I'm surprised they're not saying that the Chinese dynasty were all white.
They probably getting there.
Yeah, give it time.
Everything.
It's difficult when you stole your history from everybody else. You have to keep making stuff up, because you can't go backwards only so far. Their history is really very short compared to the history of Africans. So they really can't trace themselves that far back. So if they don't whitewash it, then they have to acknowledge they got that, you know, to start a civilization from some other culture, and they're not going to admit that.
I would fast forward that one too. Okay, so everybody that ever lived or breathed in Africa was white. Okay, even if that's true, what does that have to do with anyone being mistreated right now?
Well, I guess if you're inferior by their logic, you deserve to be mistreated. They go so far to even say that they rescued people from Africa and brought them over. What's his name? Bill O'Reilly, I believe it was. I think it was him that said that you know, basically black people were lucky to be brought here from Africa and civilized.
Oh, boy.
So, you know. So they use that basis of inferiority as a foundation and a premise for everything that they've done to non-white people.
And they have to justify slavery and the mistreatment of non-whites that live in this country. So they have to keep up this lie. So they have to keep reinventing the lie every generation or so in order to cover up for what they're doing, because that is exactly what they're doing.
And you have to revise the books. I'm sorry.
Yes. I'm sorry, Pam, but what I was going to say quickly, if you go back and do a research of the history of Nevada, Arizona, and Alaska, a lot of these white supremacists in the South during the Jim Crow era and during the time of the civil rights struggle, with all those atrocities that they did with the lynchings and the killing, they left the South and they went to those states. Especially Alaska. Alaska has a lot of white supremacists that left from Mississippi, Arkansas, Alabama, that went up there in the Great Northwest, Seattle, as well as on into Alaska. So it's with Sarah Palin acting out the way that she does, and her parents moved to Alaska, I believe it was in the early 60s, you might want to check their background to see what they were up to.
Indeed. So I guess it's time for a little history revision.
Yeah, I recommend everybody check out that website and their spin on everything. Mm-hmm. Okay. To save 350 years of white history. There's white-history.com.
Okay, I'll check it out.
I think that, you know, if you can, I never understood that quote that he controls the. That Orwell quote, but I'm just thinking that if you control the past, you control the future. So if you rewrite the history, that's that's what they're trying to do is control the future. It's a direct line to the future. They can control it because they've rewritten history, and that's what that book 1984 was all about.
Mm-hmm.
How they set out to rewrite the history.
That is why they all.
I think a key part of that movie was too was just that, hey, well, while we're in the process of rewriting or getting rid of, you know, our past information, we're going to really encourage people not to talk about it right now either. You know, don't talk about nothing that's going on, you know, as we getting rid of history and everything else. So, you know, eroding that context and then keeping everybody that, or encouraging people to, you know, don't speak, you know, about it.
That's why we got to stop keeping their secrets. Start telling our children the truth. And the best way for people, in my opinion, to tell their children the truth, tell them what you've gone through. Tell them your experiences. I bet you we don't do that, maybe because they're painful, maybe because we're supposed to be omnipotent to our children. But, you know, if you don't know the history and you just haven't read the books, you can tell them what you've experienced and what you've observed. You can start there. Because we're sending our kids out, and they're getting cold cock right between the eyes. And some get up off their feet, a few get off their feet and persevere. Some get off their feet, stumble through life, and some just never get up. And this is a crime that we are sending generation after generation out here as ignorant as the day they were born. And we have experienced white supremacy all our life, and we're not sharing that information. That is a crime, and that's child abuse.
Do you guys know the name of the good witch that was in The Wiz?
No.
The good.
Remember that movie?
The movie The Wiz. The light skinned black female played the at the end. She was singing that. If you believe in your heart and all that stuff. If you believe, I can't think of her names. Dang. But anyway, she was on KPFK. They did like a
Earth the Kid.
No, not Earth the Kid. I'll look it up. Lena Horne. Yeah, she was telling a story on KPFK. You know, they was doing a Black History thing, and she was talking about the fact that Paul Robeson, they grew up back in Harlem together, and she didn't know anything about Black history. And she said that Paul Robeson told her that her grandmother was the person that got him basically on the straight and narrow. And she was talking about how her grandmother never told her any of these stories. She had to hear from Paul Robeson about her own grandmother and all the pain that her grandmother went through as far as racism, white supremacy. And she was speaking on that very thing that Pam just said, as far as not she did, you know, the fact that she didn't tell Lena Horne anything about, you know, the misery that she went through, that straight up hell, and she learned from she learned about her grandmother from Paul Robeson. I just found that interesting. And she,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, but she learned it so well that didn't she end up marrying a white man?
Yeah,
well, the history lesson wasn't that great for her.
Maybe it came too late.
Right, it was too late.
You know,
she got some banned music. Her music was banned. She's got some songs that they played, and she was talking about the so-called founding fathers, and she was basically saying that in the song, she was saying that stop quoting them, it was an interesting song, but it got banned on the radio. They didn't want to play it.
And she's right, because I never refer to these people as our founding fathers, because I hear black people say that all the time, and it irks me. I always said the so-called founding fathers or the United States of America. I never said my country or none of that, because it's not my country. I don't have a country. I just happen to be here because of circumstances, but I don't claim this place as my country.
And it doesn't claim you either or us. So I agree with you. I just happen to be here. I have a stake in it, but, you know.
We have to write these things down. I know that I have some regret about not, you know, recording some of my elders that have passed now, just getting there, you know, doing interviews with them and learning more. So, I mean, I talk to other elders now, and they have a lot. I mean, they have a lot. They have a lot of history and a lot to say. And I guess it's for us now to, I guess maybe interview them or at least just write some of these things down for ourselves. So when we get ready to pass the information on, we have some documents where we can, you know, go right to, and, you know, so we can do it in an efficient way.
I feel the same way. I wish I had talked to the people, you know, the elder people in my family before they passed. I wish I had really done that. I regret that. I don't know that I would have gotten how much information I would have gotten. Some might have been reluctant to tell everything, but I know I would have got something out of it. And once they started talking, they probably would have shared a lot of things.
I remember hearing a story about someone doing an interview with a dying elder, and just because of the interviewing process and her talking about her past and whatnot, she ended up living longer.
Kind of like a cathartic thing. Cathartic.
I mean, she was so excited about just talking about it, and I don't know, man. It had a physiological effect on her. So I think it's really a detriment that we don't bring some of these things out in our elders. I guess they feel like their stories is insignificant and whatnot, but it's very significant, and we just have to want to know about it.
It's a sign of respect, you know, to acknowledge what they went through. You're basically honoring your ancestors by letting them know that their experiences were important enough for you to listen to it. And it's probably a little bit off of their chest. You know, they've been carrying a lot of pain around for a very long time. I mean, our ancestors went through stuff we talk about today and how bad it is.
Yep.
But they went through things that probably would have broke a lot of us in our present state, or maybe not, but they went through a lot more than we did. And who was listening to them? Yeah.
Can I be heard?
Yes,
ma'am.
Greetings, everybody, from Jamaica.
Nice and warm.
Boo.
Oh, you gonna clown us now, right?
I'm literally on the plantation. But this is Minnie B, and I wanted to just say that this whole conversation has been amazing. It has taken me back to my AP English classes in Illinois and how miserable it was to read To Kill a Mockingbird and Harriet Beecher Stowe and Catcher in the Rye and Huckleberry Finn, and then to be graded on it. And the more white identified I was, the better grade you get, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was just thinking about Justice and how, you know, her being 10 years old and other young children nowadays and going to school and using codified language while reading this book in a class. I'm just wondering how many parents are ready to back up and defend their children who are going to buck against reading this racist stuff.
That's a good question. I think.
And the other thing, you know, Pam, what you were saying about elders, I had the opportunity to really spend a lot of time with my great-grandmother, and I cherish it. She died when I was 24, but I was able to ask her a lot of questions about growing up, and she had stories to tell about going to Harlem from Tennessee and her mother dying in the cotton fields, giving birth in the cotton fields, picking cotton. And I'm wondering if just talking to any black people who are elderly, you know, they're all around us.
Right, that's true.
And just sit next to them and ask them.
You know, I had an amazing conversation with a friend of mine's mother the first time I met her, and she started talking, and, you know, it was just amazed me how sharp she was. I don't know why. And it was like she was saying stuff that you know, you have a tendency to put people in a category when they're elderly, you know, and
yep.
she was saying stuff, and I was like, wow, I can't believe I can come back and talk to you another time, because I was sitting there quiet, and I like to talk. But she had me sitting there quiet, just listening to her. So, yeah, you're right. You didn't have to be a relative. That's a good point.
Yeah, and I was thinking, just think about how many of us hadn't thought about them English classes or AP English classes in how long? And now just having this conversation in the context, it's all coming forward.
Yeah.
I remember that line when we read Huckleberry Finn in my AP English class when Tom puts the metal objects or rocks or whatever it is into Jim's food and he bites it and it you know, almost mashes his teeth out. Like, I remember that line, like, it just stuck with me. And I don't remember, like, us discussing, you know, that scene. I don't remember, you know, like, what is this saying about black people? Like, I don't remember. Yeah, I don't really remember what they were saying the point of all this was. Like, what is the point of this story? Like, I don't recall what the white identified line to that is supposed to be. I don't know what the white identified A plus answer to that is. Does anybody know? Like, if you want to get an A in a class under racism, white supremacy, what are you supposed to say about Huckleberry Finn?
He's a pretty good guy.
You have to be white identified or else you've got to be Jim.
I recall, I had two instructors tell me that Jim was the hero of the book, and that he was the most, because they said that he was the most moral and upstanding character in the book. But, you know.
Oh, he does. Because he took his abuse like a man.
He just worships white people. I'm so glad I said we could do multiple shows on this. That is the part that they're not talking about extracting that. Like, to really change this, you would almost have to extract all of the black people. Like, just removing nigger does nothing for all of the scenes where he is willing to die for these white people. Like, that's not even being discussed. I certainly don't remember us talking about it in class.
I mean, it sounded like he is repeatedly deceived and abused by, like, 10 and 11-year-old white people.
That's the whole story.
Yeah.
That's a sad example.
That's anti-racism, watching a black male be deceived and abused by white children for 430 pages. That's anti-racism.
did you guys get the analogy, like, with the Duke and the King, those adult white males that kind of just, you know, lie and pretty much steal everything. They even deceive weaker white people. I guess Huck and whoever else they come across. And to me, it just seemed like, especially because they want to rap, it just seemed like kind of like a analogy of white people setting the seas and, you know, just dominating everybody on the entire planet.
I think there's a part in there where you talk about, I think Tom Sawyer is saying, yeah, well, you know, I'm, or I don't know if it's Huckford or whatever, one of them say, I'm I'm going to stop thinking about the morals of things or whatever. You know, I'm going to do what is handiest at the time. I'm just going to go with whatever is handiest. And that's, I mean, me, that just spells white people out to the letter. You know, they'll say whatever ahead of time. They'll say whatever. But when it comes down to it, they're looking at how to handle you in that situation right then, right there, because they know however the words are going to get exchanged in that interaction, that's what's going to determine, you know, who's going to get their way, however these words get passed back and forth right then, right there.
Mm-hmm.
$6,000 a talk makes anti-racism a very handy occupation at the time.
What? Speaking about
pay attention. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry, Minnie B. I was going to add on to what you were saying with Huck and Tom Sawyer. What about Becky Thatcher? That her role that she played in the story.
What about it?
Did y'all see her as being the motivating factor? Because remember, Tom and Huck, they were so enamored with her.
Is she in Tom Sawyer or is she in Huckleberry Finn?
She's in one of those books, Becky Thatcher.
She's in Tom Sawyer.
I think it was Tom Sawyer. Yeah.
Okay.
He was very enamored. I thought they were going to get sexually involved, and then I remembered it was Tom Sawyer.
Oh,
seriously, yeah. I mean, he was really, like, out on her trail. I said, oh, my goodness, I don't remember any pornography in Tom Sawyer, so, you know,
I forgot, I didn't forget to mention, it was just I was trying to make a priority out of focusing on, you know, the really explicit aspects of racism, white supremacy, and white identification. But shout out to Proud Gay Black Man. The pedophilia and homosexuality is coming. There is a whole lot of cross-dressing in Huckleberry Finn. Huck, one of the white male children, he dresses up like a female at one point. These older white guys, the Duke and the King that he mentioned, they dress up like a female. Like, there's a lot of this going on. Even towards the end, Huck and Tom are part of their plan. They're supposed to dress up in black, or not blackface, but I mean, they're supposed to dress up as Jim's mom. That's part of the disguise. One of them is supposed to dress up as a black female. I thought that was real interesting, that white people love this book so much, and you got young white male children dressing up like females. Real interesting.
Mm. Well, Mark Twain sure had his finger on the pulse. Did anyone take note of the celebration of the 50th anniversary of To Kill a Mockingbird last year?
Nope.
Oh, it was the 50th anniversary, and it was quite the NPR, National Public Radio, had a big old special about it, and there were people walking around, touring around the country about why this is one of the great American novels, and all the wonderful white people coming to, white people to the rescue. in that story. And also, are you familiar with The Help? I think that's the contemporary, Catherine Stockard is the contemporary refinement of Mark Twain, Harper Lee, all of these racist records.
Wasn't she one of Oprah's read?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, if she's on Oprah.
Yeah. It's a white woman writing about black maid. Bestseller list last year for weeks. May still be on there.
I believe Pam was the one that mentioned it about with white people rise in Hollywood, we've seen the decline in the black female, how they're depicted as well as the black male. So it just goes to show. That white women writing about, they feel that they're so comfortable that they know so much about black females that they can write a book about us.
Oh, she got it wrong. And they always get it wrong.
Does anybody know what that Juneteenth celebration is about?
Oh, it's when the slaves found out in Galveston, Texas. It's mostly celebrated in the southwestern states. It's 2 years after the actual Emancipation Proclamation. That's when the slaves found out that they were actually freed on that day on June 19th. 2 years, or was it? I think it was in 1867. Mm-hmm. And that's why it was celebrated.
I just thought about Jim, the fact that he was free, but he didn't know he was free. And I just thought about that celebration, how ironic that is.
You know, probably I think it's very historically correct, though, that he didn't think he was free because the emancipation did not free slaves, and a lot of slaves were still, you know, legally slaves. And even if they were so-called not legally, you know, legally free, they weren't free. So to me, whether the Emancipation Proclamation happened before or after, whatever, they weren't free.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Speaking of Galveston, Gus, I wish you would do a show on Jack Johnson, cowbells. We'll be ringing all off the wall on him, the first black heavyweight, and how they're trying to get him to get the president to give him a pardon, because this is the man that was in armored with white women, that they have a specific law, the Mann Act, that if you carry women across state lines for illegal purposes, that is what they will charge you with. It's after Jack Johnson. So a show done in his honor.
I did my avatar. I had my whole avatar for the first, I don't know, like 7-8 months that this program was on the air, Blog Talk Radio. My avatar was from the Jack Johnson comic book, the original Johnson. That's the name alone is a cowbell. But yeah, the person who did this comic book, who's reported to be the author, is a black male. And I contacted him before the program even started at Blog Talk Radio. And he was supposed to come on. He agreed. And I was just trying to make space. But he did this. This comic book is crazy. Like, it's really, it's crazy. And the comic book, the white people that were hosting it for him, it was an online comic book. The white people that were hosting it were practicing racism against the black male who put this comic book together. So it was going to be real interesting to talk about why he did this comic book in the first place, and then how the white people were being racist against him. I should get back on the grind on that, because I was I had Jack Johnson. That was my avatar. That was my photograph that I had up. It was Jack Johnson with a racist in his clutches.
Hey Gus. Have you ever seen a film called Chasing Amy?
Chasing Amy. Doesn't sound familiar. I don't believe so.
Chasing Amy. And there is a there is a scene in there with it's a comic book convention with a black male who is speaking to a white audience about writing comic books. And he comes off all militant about racism in comic book writing. And then he pulls out a gun. I think you can see it on YouTube. That particular clip, you might be real interested in checking that one out. It's called Chasing Amy. And I think that clip is on YouTube. And the black male is militant, cries racism, becomes militant, and then when all the white people run away scared, he then goes into his homosexual personality.
His name is, I think that character's name is Hooper X. I could be wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Hooper X. That's, I'll check that out. Chasing Amy, 1997.
Yep.
Ben Affleck.
And it's quite timely as also with the author of Melanin Apocalypse.
Yeah, he'll be back this weekend.
Yeah, that's scary.
Are you going to ask him about Mark Twain?
Man, we We're doing two books. We're doing his book on White Odyssey, which is supposed to be the opposite, where the black people have taken over and are mistreating white people. And we're doing the other book that he recommended because he said, there's a whole genre of these books where white people write about killing all the black people. And he said, this guy it's above me. I'm too lazy to reach up to get it. Whatever that other book is that came out in the 60s, in the 1960s, pay attention to the context. So this book came out in the 60s and is also about killing all the black people. And he said, this is a classic. And he said, I have all of this. Oh, I have a sound clip. You can hear some of him. So I don't feel like I'm not going to play it because I played it before, so I won't play it. But, yeah, I recorded the conversation, which he began. This is an author. He's written over 30 books. He began the conversation. He asked me how I was doing. I said I was okay. And I asked him how he was doing. He said, oh, I'm pretty fair. As he recommended books about white people killing all the black people. I'm pretty fair.
Well, I have a question because I've been listening to the last six shows, and just before I came down to Jamaica, I just hit this point of realizing the active pursuit of making blackness extinct. It sunk in. And I think I was in a certain amount of denial, but then I started remembering about all the American Indians, how many there were, and then the government made the policy to kill them, you know? And now Congress just recently passed a bill saying that tribes with less than 1,200 members are considered extinct. And I thought, this is what the process has begun with black people. And I don't want to be extinct.
Well, we should be.
And you know what?
I want us.
Okay, good.
I was just going to say, I hope everyone is real serious about this part of the discussion, because really the whole reason that I was interested in doing this was because it just in my mind, when I kept hearing removal of nigger, I was not just thinking of the term. I was unfortunately thinking of black people because I suspect white people might be thinking that. This might be what that process looks like. Removal of the actual people that they recognize as niggers.
Have you guys been following that whole thing with the government shutdown? Because I think this is related, where they're talking about suspending government, and basically a lot of black people work for the federal government, and I think that's racial code. Anytime white people blame the federal government for something, that's saying, these lazy black people working here. And I think it kind of reminded me of Nazi Germany, where, they put out all this propaganda, they start changing history, and then, they strip non-white people of their, whoever they consider non-white, of their government post before they make that next move. Did anybody notice that connection?
Yep. There are many parallels.
There are a lot of indications that because they write about it. They talk about depopulation. They talk about it all the time.
Mm-hmm. Because on the show last night with Mr. Minister Kojo, what's his name, Livingstone, he mentioned that when he gave the whole history, the 200-year plan, and all of the histories that these people have behind them with the depopulation. And we all know that this is all gearing up right now with this government shutdown, the budget cut. They're on a continuing resolution right now. I believe it's until the end of this month. So they are trying right now to get the focus be on the non-whites as the blame, as we are the ones draining the system, because already President Obama is taking the hit because he's black, he's up there, he's running the country into the ditch worse than George Bush did. Now the blacks who are on these programs are also the next drain to the system. So this is what it's all gearing up to, is to point the finger at us, because we all know how white people get when their money situation starts acting funny. They have to find someone to blame other than themselves.
Yep, scapegoating. They call it scapegoating. That's what Obama's there to do. And black people are going to be scapegoats by default. That's why it was important to get us supportive of him, so that if you support him, then you're to blame also.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they do the same thing over and over. The problem is people, the victims are always in denial, and the victims are always in denial until it's too late. So
true.
Let's not let it be too late.
Look at all the weapons that's being bought. You can't even get some weapons now. It's a back order. Bullets are back orders on it because these people, they are gearing up for a war. And we're the only ones who are sitting back here not doing anything about it. Not like, I believe 909 was one of those who were saying about going out there and learning how to fire weapons and going out to the shooting ranges and doing things like that. You don't find too many non-white black folks doing these things.
Well, they're getting us to get into bed with them, and once you get into bed, you're done anyway. That's why they're pushing the interracial thing for multiple reasons. But one of the reasons is it's the best neutralization process that you can ever create, and they've done it throughout history for hundreds of years. They destroyed non-white populations, literally destroyed them by the interracial sex. And if you look at it now, you hardly ever see a black male and a black female together on a TV or movie screen. In a romantic or loving or supportive situation, you never see it because they're trying to program us to think that we don't need each other.
And I don't think this whole colorblind, multicultural nonsense would work if white people didn't turn up the pressure for these interracial relationships between white people and non-white people. I don't think non-white people would be as confused if that condition wasn't present.
What's more confusing than laying down with your enemy? I mean, right then and there, you're done. You're done. You can't fight something and embrace it sexually at the same time. It's a physical and mental, psychological impossibility.
You're right, because you mentioned, Pam, about your cousin that's married to the white person sending out those stupid emails. Now, that person would really want to think that, why am I even doing these things? But you said she's so far gone. It's a lost cause.
Yeah, pretty much. She's pretty much totally, completely white identified, and doesn't understand how long story, but
Well, have people learned anything from what happened in Egypt? I learned a few things to pay attention to. And one was how the internet got shut down real fast.
I suspect those white supremacists, most powerful ones, they're using this so-called area known as the Middle East. I think they used Egypt as a springboard to pretty much create more confusion.
Yep.
You see they're about to invade Libya now.
Yep.
You know,
there
was a black guy that actually called in to Alex Jones' radio show because he was asking people from the Middle East to call in, and a black man called in, sounds like a black man from Egypt, and he said basically that a lot of it had to do with, he says the people, they congregate normally, you know, so you can easily get a camera shot of a crowd of people because that's what they do, they congregate. He said that a lot of it was a CIA-staged demonstration. That's what he said.
I figure it's because with the Gaddafi situation, I've always said that's what's happening in Libya is a CIA-staged operation. They got their people to go in there in order to topple Gaddafi because he's one so-called Arab that identify himself as being black. And the other Arab nations, they couldn't stand him because they're making the rest of them look bad. So they want to get rid of him, especially Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia wants to secure their position.
And they're in bed with the Europeans.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I would recommend really quickly that, you know, check out YouTube, do a search for Lindsay Williams, Speaks to the Elites. And he basically, and I see him as some credible information, but, you know, you judge for yourself. But, you know, Lindsay Williams speaks to the elite, and he did a, you know, somebody put a series of his videos and audios up there, and I'm telling you, it's really fascinating. But it puts everything to me in perspective as far as what is really happening in the Middle East and what will happen here.
Yeah, I've on the shows before. He was a chaplain, worked for one of the oil companies in Alaska, and he's somewhat credible.
Yeah, because the things that he predicted when I listened to him 2.5 years ago, I listened to a video, and what he predicted pretty much it seems like it's playing out right now. So that's how I judge credibility. If you said something in the past and it's been true, then I kind of have a tendency to say, well, maybe what you're saying, I don't necessarily agree that he couldn't be wrong or have a hidden agenda. So you just judge it for yourself. But I thought it was somewhat credible, you know.
What did he?
It was Lindsay Williams.
Speak to the elite. I'm sorry.
Got it.
And it's on, you know, you can check it out on YouTube, do a search real quick.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You mind giving some of the details, Sam?
Ooh, goodness. Okay. Well, basically, real quickly what he said without, you know, me not having, you know, being an authority in what he said. Basically, what he said was a lot of the stuff that's happening in the Middle East is staged, and that the Arabs are going to get double-crossed, and all hell's going to break loose over there. And it's all planned, and it's going to affect the price of oil here, price of gas here. He said keep your eye on China and Russia because China, and I do remember reading this, China had already built a natural gas pipeline to, you know, from Russia. So he basically said China and Russia have kind of buddied up, and that what's going to happen is the Arab world is going to be so furious over the collapse of their economy, being bankrupted by the white supremacists, that it's going to create a lot of instability, a lot of cost of living instability here. And it's all just by design because they want to destroy the economy.
Correct.
Here.
I said that years ago, I remember hearing him say that, because if you recall, this is why they want to get into Iran, because Iran is so close to those all of those little stands, to Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, all of those stands that was part of the Soviet Union. And then the gas pipeline, the so-called gas, is run through Iran because they're so close, and it could go straight through into Russia. And that is one reason why they want to get in there. And that's why when they had the Shah propped up in there, it gave them access to get to the gas pipeline. And that's why they want to get back in there and get, out, Ahmadinejad.
Yeah.
And one of the things he said, he was a chaplain out there in Alaska, and he claimed to have be privy to information that there was a lot of oil out there. And he said that he was in a meeting where they said that, man, we have mad oil out here enough to, you know, support the United States, blah blah blah. They were going to announce it, and then the next day he said they were like, we're not announcing it. You know what I mean? We're going to take the oil from the other nations. We're going to use their oil. We're not going to use our oil.
Correct.
He talked about that, too, about how the whole thing is a big scam. But they always have an agenda. One thing about the white supremacy, you never underestimate them. They never do anything without a reason. Just the same way this what's happening to black people with the interracial thing, what's happening to black people and black female images, with images of black males as being homosexuals, all of us being HIV-infected, i.e. whores and queers and whatever. So everything is just, everything that you see is happening for a reason, in my opinion. And the one thing I think should be a litmus test, at least it is for me, anybody they praise, black or white, is promoting white supremacy. So when they give people awards, when they say this is a good thing to do, a good thing, you know.
Yep.
I just automatically say, okay, how do they benefit? Because I know I don't.
Hold on 1 second, because some other people called in, and I missed the caller. I got I was caught up listening. If you called in and you were trying to speak, press 1, and I can, you know, open your line up. My bad. I'll do a better job of watching the switchboard. The number is 347-215-6071. Just press 1, and I'll get you. I did want to see if the female caller at 2736, in case Tater Pie wants a sound clip, how did you want to be referenced? Are you still with us, 2736? Oh, I'm sorry. Were you 4635? Sorry about that.
Oh,
4635?
Yeah.
My bad.
Oh, Nicole,
right on. There we go. In case you might get sound clipped, a lot of folks have been sound clipped. You should check out that page because you might be sound clipped. Like, she has been cranking out videos furiously, and lots of people have ended up on videos. Pam, Mr. Nero, I think 909, lots of folks. So, Nicole, you might pop up in a YouTube video soon. I was curious with regards to the term nigger in the book. Do you all have any other suggestions in terms of how would you codifying how you would respond to that in terms of, okay, if white people are in charge, so if they decide to replace it, what would you suggest to compensate for the removal of that term?
Black emperor.
What was it? I heard
emperor.
Black emperor.
Emperor.
Emperor. Got black.
You talking about? You talking Victim. About what term? What term would our white people use, or just what term would go good there instead of nigger?
If you were giving out, if you were trying to offer compensatory counter-racist suggestions, and racist man, racist woman say, all right, we're going to take out nigger, and you said, okay, well, you know, this would be my counter-racist suggestion. If we're not going to have nigger in there, this is the word that, you know, I would want to compensate so that we still have truth about what's happening.
Okay, yeah, just victim of racism or victim of white.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right, that's what I would say.
White Jim.
White.
I think the criteria was truth, I think.
I'd say victim, or like you said, victim of white supremacy.
Victim Jim. I like victim.
Mm-hmm. Yep, either those words, victim or black, because we know they're speaking about a black person. So when you use the word nigger, put black in there.
Mistreated. Oh, and I think they did say that the word engine would be replaced as well. I think
what are they going to replace it with?
I have no idea.
Native American?
Tonto?
The world?
Maybe red skin or something more offensive. I don't know. Who knows what these people?
Oh, man, that is crazy. I would rather just have this. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. I think victim Jim, because it begs the question from children who will have to, future generations who have to read this crap. Why is he a victim? I think that would have. Give children an opportunity to say, why do you call him Victim Jim?
Yep.
What is he a victim of?
Yeah.
Racism, mm-hmm. White supremacy.
And who's the victimizer?
There. Victim Jim.
Yeah.
You know, they're making a new version of the Lone Ranger in Tonto.
They just love to see themselves victimizing people.
Mm-hmm.
When you say a new version, it's still going to be with so-called Indian.
Yeah, they always end up winning. You know, Tonto and the horses always end up killing the Indians, defeating them.
Yep. Johnny Depp. Is Lone Ranger. No, Johnny Depp is Tonto.
He's Tonto?
Yeah.
Oh,
Yeah. He's an idiot for taking that role. But I guess you got to pay the bills some kind of way.
Oh,
speaking of victims of racism, do any of you have a fast food place out in your area called Taco Bueno?
Yes.
No.
Yeah. You have it out there where you are, Gus?
No, ma'am.
Okay, when you all get a chance, go. It almost shocked the daylights out of me. Go look on their board and see what they have for one of their desserts. It's called monkey bread.
I've heard of that before.
I've made it.
It's black bread with white ice on it.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Excuse me, Pam.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. You called it, you said it, what's it made of?
And the board, I happened to look up on the board to see the description. It said it's a black bread, it's a dessert. It's supposed to be a black bread with chocolate on it and white icing on it that you pull apart. Almost, I guess, maybe like a cinnamon. But the name of it is called monkey bread.
Sound like they read Mark Twain, too. Rubbed off on them, too. Wow.
Sound very appetizing.
I like that Mark Twain moment. I think I'm going to incorporate that.
Oh, I'm borrowing big time. In fact, this is going to be part of my new big gun. When people say, you really think all white people are racist? I'm going to say, yes, indeed. I even think white children are racist. Listen to what Mark Twain said. Well, one thing was dead sure, and that was that Tom Sawyer was in earnest and was actually going to help steal that nigger out of slavery.
From a good white person that owned it?
I'm sorry?
Didn't she say something about a good white person that owned it?
Oh, yeah. That was Miss Watson. I helped steal good Mrs. Watson's nigger. Yes, he said that repeatedly and had a lot of anguish over it. He goes on to say, that was the thing that was too many for me. Here was a boy, he's talking about Tom Sawyer. Tom was a boy that was respectable and well brung up and had a character to lose. And folks at home that had characters, and he was bright and not leather-headed and knowing, not ignorant and not mean, but kind. And yet here he was without any more pride or rightness or feeling than to stoop to this business and make himself ashamed and his family ashamed before everybody. I couldn't understand it. No way at all. It was outrageous, and I knowed I ought to just up and tell him so, and so be his true friend, and let him quit the thing right where he was, and save himself. And I did start to tell him, but he shut me up and says, don't you reckon I know what I'm about? Don't I generally know what I'm about? Yes. Didn't I say I was going to help steal that nigger? Yes. Well, then, that's all he said, and that's all I said. It weren't no use to say no more, because when he said he'd do a thing, he always done it. Not only do we have two white children who seem to have an expansive grasp of their role as racists within the system of white supremacy, they are so refined, these white children can recognize when white people are breaking the rules of racism, white supremacy. Mm-hmm. That is astounding. Mark Twain.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes it seem so bad that these two children are going to say they're going to go and steal a grown person. As though he was an object, they're going to go steal this man.
But that goes back to white people thinking or teaching their white children that black people are children.
Inferior.
Yeah.
Inferior.
That reminds me of the movie The Toy. Where
it
was supposed to be a toy and a little white boy was like, I want him. You're my toy now.
Mm-hmm. I'm not Richard Pryor.
Playing a doll or something. I don't know what she was playing with.
Yeah.
He was in a dress in that film, too. I always point that out when I reference that film. They had him in a dress serving fried chicken to white men in Louisiana who probably liked Mark Twain, too.
Goodness gracious. They must have a ton of man-sized dresses in Hollywood. Man.
They could. Speaking of dresses, my niece, they went this past weekend, went to see that Martin Lawrence movie, and I was telling them, I said, y'all have no shame of yourself. Here it is, a black man wearing a dress. This is Black History Month. And you're going to go and sit in a movie theater and watch this man running around in a dress dressed as a woman? He said, oh, well, we didn't even think of it like that. I said, well, you need to think before you go and do these things.
Man, I done had like 3 bootleggers try to hit me up. Got that Big Mama house.
You know what was really disturbing about it? It wasn't, to me, it wasn't Martin Lawrence. I mean, he's already done it twice. I think having the young black male, you know, This is part of growing up. You're a man now. Or, I mean, you're an adult male now. Put on a dress. I thought that was the most disturbing for me.
Yep.
Hey, it's back to Tom Sawyer. They read Tom Sawyer, too, man. That was what Huck was doing. He was dressing up like a female, too. They read Tom Sawyer.
Mark Twain moment.
Wow. Wow. I think, you know, it's black people, just like that list of jokes that I sent you, Gus, I had a person, a friend of mine, who I thought was a little more conscious. She thought they were hilarious. And I just said, black people are just so used to being degraded. We are collectively so used to it that we don't even notice it. It's just like you said about being numb to hearing the word nigga in that book. You become desensitized, and I think we've become desensitized to our own degradation.
It's two sides of the same coin. I think that Tom Sawyer and Richard Pryor, the toy, is, you know, is white people learning that you're supposed to be using black people to for your advancement. And then black people get taught, you know, you're supposed to get degraded, you know, for white people's advancement, you know.
Entertainment.
Has anyone read Derek Bell's book, A Faces at the Bottom of the Well?
I've read half of it. Space Traders is in that. We talked about that before. I read that for sure.
Okay.
I just find sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I know Dr. Wilson talks about the man as like the man and the toy. Instead of like a toy, it's the toy. I mean, I just find that interesting. Like, it just seems to me like it's just saying black people are toys, like something to play with.
That is Mark Twain. I'm going to see how many times I can reference Mark Twain for everything, people. That is Mark. That is Jim. Nigger Jim is like the toy for these white children. It's Mark Twain. It's Mark. This is like, if you want the essence of white supremacy, read Mark Twain. And then remember that quote that was in the description for the last show about his thoughts on how pale and sickly white people look and how beautiful and perfect black people look. And then read Mark Twain.
All right. Well, what are people, do people have any suggestions, ideas, or where are they going to go? Or what are they going to do should a Katrina happen in your community or Egypt happen in this country? Do people have been thinking about it or have any kind of a plan of action that they'd be willing to share?
I'm thinking about it, but I haven't formulated an entire plan. And I've been thinking...
I have no plan, but I'm wide open to hear suggestions.
Well, one of the thoughts I've been having is when, Gus, you were talking, I was listening to the folks over in England, you know, and they were saying how when it comes down there that they're going to leave. And I asked the question, well, where are you going to go? And, you know, woman on the phone on the show said, you know, she had a place in another country, Africa, I believe. She said she was going to go. And I was thinking, well, maybe non-white people need to, black people need to have a plan to take over a state at least.
I know a lot of people are talking about this. They've been talking about this for years. I mean, it's in California. I mean, it's discussed a lot because, you know, we got earthquakes, we got all types of disasters. And my thinking right now is, see, if you have, first of all, like you said, Katrina, they heard about the hurricane. They knew it was coming. You feel what I'm saying? But some people acted, some people didn't. Then you had the initial impact of the hurricane. Then the aftermath. Then, you know, then the dome or whatever there. Everybody was at the dome. So I think for myself, the initial, first of all, just recognizing the signs, you know, and then
yes.
I don't want to, you know, not being in that impact zone, you know, I definitely don't want to be, you know, in the impact zone. And I think my biggest work will happen after the initial impact, when things kind of settle down a bit, and then, you know, then you can make your moves. But if
I
you get caught, sorry.
If you have more 909, please go.
I was just gonna say, yeah, I think you have to survive that initial impact if you can.
And I would say, listen to Lindsay Williams. Listen to that YouTube video of Lindsay Williams, and he does describe in some detail what he thinks will happen, and he does recommend having a plan. You know, with your money,
mm-hmm.
you know, understanding that paper money may not be worth anything. You know, within the next, you know, year and a half, and also having some food and water supplies. You know, I hate to, you know, make it sound doom and gloom, but if there is something, say a short-lived emergency, do you have anything in your house, you know, batteries, flashlight, alternative heating sources if you need it, emergency first aid kit, fire extinguisher, you know, the things
toilet.
That you would need. Yeah, the things that you would need in the case of, say, not something drastic and dire, but just something that is a short-lived emergency. Are we even prepared for that? You know, so,
I know. Mm-hmm. I was just going to say one thing that I figured that I did learn from Katrina that I would, you know, add to my plan is that I'm going to see where the white people are going. You know, where they are evacuate to, and then follow them. You know, see where they're going. I'm not gonna. I see a crowd of black people going that way. A crowd of white people going over there. I'm gonna follow the white.
Now it depends on why they're going that way. You know, they may not want you to go that way. You may be trying to get away from them.
I would be following white people. They
I mean,
may
it
be trying
depends to... on what kind of emergency you're talking about. You know.
I'm talking about one where they might end up rounding off all the black people in one area. I'm talking about where that is a possibility.
Oh, I want to be very clear. Now, I think if white people say that's going down, I don't think anybody has a plan that's going to do anything about that. I think if white supremacy exists, they have the ability to do that whenever they feel like it. And I have no idea what you could do to forestall that. If anybody, you know, thinks that's not true, set me straight, please.
I have to agree.
Mm, so do I.
That's a sad, tragic thing about it.
Mm-hmm. I would not be following the white people because their whole plan is to get away from you, to extinguish you. So if they create this disaster and they're going to into their bomb shelters and fallen shelters or wherever it is that they have for themselves, you can rest assured they don't want to see any non-white faces up in there with them.
It'd be more difficult for the white people to do that if we were, you know, peppered in with them versus all lumped up by ourselves over there. You know.
Do you think we'd stand out if it was just, you know, if we were peppered in with them? Do you think, you know, since it would probably be fewer of us than them in this area of the world if we were peppered in? Do you think, you know, we would kind of stand out or we'd be easier to isolate?
I think either way, you know, if the plan was to get rid of us, I mean, I go with the idea that, you know, they could do that right now if they wanted to. But it was a situation that was similar where, you know, I guess people had an option of where to go. And, you know, like Katrina, I guess, if there is an option of where to go, I think we have a lot of evidence to say, you know, grouping all of us together, you know, I haven't seen that successful results with that.
Oh, I agree with that. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's way more efficient to herd us all together and use one attack. If we're peppered in, it takes a lot more effort and resources for them to get rid of us.
United, independent. Yeah, that's great. I did want to say, though, if it does ever get to that point, if I was going to have contact with other non-white people, I would hope we had some counter-violence discussions. Because if it ever gets to that point, I would hope, you know, that is at least a thought. Like, man, they could be rounding us up to kill all of us. Like, man, we should have some discussions about whether we at least want to go out taking a swing or what. Like, I mean, that should at least be allowed to be discussed. Like, if I'm around black people who are saying that, you know, that's talking crazy and that's, I think I'm going to be by myself. But I would want black people who are serious. Like, you know, we should at least think about this. In fact, maybe we should, that's just what we should be doing. Because, I mean, you would have to think Daryl Bain and the gang, you know, they have not just been writing these books for no reason.
Right. Urban Guerrilla Warfare. It's a good book. Good book. Got some good information.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, I've done some guerrilla farming, and I got a lot of mountain areas that I'm familiar with. I think, like I said, the initial impact, because see, what they're trying to do out here in L.A., they have already said that they, as far as the Mexican mafia, they're planning home invasions. All of these, you know, Mexican women that are nannies and, you know, housekeepers and stuff, they, you know, their family members are, you know, gang members, part of the Mexican mafia, and they know where everything is in these mansions. They know where the safety. You know, they know that house like the back of their hand, and they're giving that information to the gangsters. So they basically want to quarantine certain areas of LA off and just have it, you know, non-whites fighting against each other in like a little isolated area. But they're planning for all these home invasions. They expect a lot of home invasions to be happening.
Did anyone watch the movie Machete?
No.
What
is it about?
I didn't see all of it. I saw some of it. I wasn't able to watch it all.
Names make it so like it might be something gruesome. What is the plot line?
I didn't watch it myself, but from what I saw, it seemed to be so-called Mexican people just going wild and killing white people. But I'm not sure. 909.
What is this? What are we talking about? Wait a minute. I was trying to open up a phone line and I just heard Mexican going wild and killing white people. What are y'all talking about?
Yeah, I'm just.
It's a movie called Machete.
Oh, I was supposed to watch that. There's some sexual stuff there too. That's I think that's a phallic representation. Doesn't he have sex? Doesn't he do like a porn scene? Like he has sex with a white woman or something? Doesn't that happen?
I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, okay. Has anyone seen it?
I think I have seen parts of it.
Is it a new film?
I've seen like parts of it.
I think that happens. Nanny, I think that's your line. There's some static on your line. If you could, I don't know.
How's that? Is that better?
No.
Is that better?
No. Yeah, I know it's your, yeah, because I just added you.
Is that
way worse.
I can't hear you. Is that better?
No, I can still hear it. I'm not sure what it is.
Okay, well, I'm going to mute. Yes, I don't know what's going on. I guess that's Sprint. But I had wanted to add some information concerning Katrina and some of the laws that had been written since, because I had to go through that. So I know them well. But I'll just listen.
Okay. If you all can tolerate that, that distortion, if you want to get that information, you know, that's just if that's okay, that buzzing sound.
Well, I'm going to go quickly, and then I'll just mute. But one of the things that was put in place is that if you're going to evacuate to another city, if there's an emergency, you will have to be ID'd. A tag will be placed on you. And that's for every emergency. It's not just for this area. In addition to that, you have to sign up on a list with the city where you're going to evacuate to. And also, we're already concentrated, and I'm talking about black folk and other non-white folk. We tend to be in an area where they could easily do whatever they chose to do if they were going to wipe us out, because we're not as scattered. Now, maybe in Mr. Gus's area, that's different. But in most areas in this country, most of us live within the big city area. So it would be easy to take us out. But there have been a lot of changes through security, Homeland Security, where you're not going to be able to move as freely as you think. And one thing that certainly happened, I didn't stay in New Orleans with the when the flooding occurred, but all of our bank accounts, even credit cards, were blocked. Mm-hmm. We could not use mm-hmm. them until 2 or 3 days later, maybe even 4. Mm-hmm. So that, and I'm talking about after the water receded or it started to recede. So there are a lot of laws in place that you're going to have to be very special in order to get past them. And it's a lot of other things I could tell you that has taken place, but since my phone line is ugly this morning, I'll just listen.
Thank you. Before we proceed, I just want to highlight again, because this is important, what she just said, very important. She mentioned Homeland Security, Irritated Genie, a.k.a. Ayo Kamathi, to my knowledge, still employed with Homeland Security. And I hope people out there, I understand a lot of us, we are confused and not well informed about Homeland Security. I just want you to pay attention to when Homeland Security is mentioned, what people are talking about. I've never heard anything good in association with Homeland Security. Never. It's always people being detained, tortured, locked up, mistreated. It's never anything about justice. So just keep that in mind. I'll mute my line. Someone called in from a block number. Your line is open. Never mind. The person that called in from 3193. 3193, your line is open.
Hey, Gus, before you mute your line, did you get to talk to Dr. Kenneth O'Reilly about coming on to talk about Homeland Security?
I will send him an email. Thank you for the reminder.
Speaking of Homeland Security, as the caller was stating, and how they are monitoring you, all of it has to do with that RFID chip that they want everyone to walk around with, where you can be tracked by satellite. That's the whole idea. Because in your driver's license, if you look on your driver's license, it has that black strip on the back of it. It looks like a barcode, like a scanner that you can swipe like a credit card. That is how they track you also, because that chip is connected to satellites, that strip, and they can track you on from your driver's license or any sort of ID that you might have to know your exact location, to pinpoint where you are. So these are all part of the Homeland Security apparatus in tracking citizens, because why it is that they want you to sign up to tell where you want to go. They want to know where you are at all times.
Oh, well, my flight down here, they had somebody walking through the airport handing out a questionnaire, a voluntary questionnaire about where I was going, who I'd be seeing, how much money would I be spending. And you get to the bottom line, and it was a TSA Homeland Security questionnaire.
I don't know about.
And they tried to say, they tried to say it was anonymous, but when you give your flight number and the where you're coming from, they already know.
Pull up the manifest and look up to see who's on that flight. So it might sound innocent, but it's all about keeping information on the citizens, which they already know, because your credit card, as they said, they can scan your credit card.
Yeah.
So get access.
Well, it's like volunteering in your oppression.
Right. It's training. They're doing psychological training. And they're also testing the population,
yep.
I believe, to see just how far they can push it. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was just thinking about cell phones, man. Like, everybody having a cell phone, that's kind of like your own little personal chip. I mean, they can, you know, I've seen some technology. I mean, they use the technology against us. It's like I've seen some information where the cell phone, it can map your brain waves, and they were saying that each person has a different their brain mapping is different, so they can tell who you are just by mapping your brain when you use the cell phone, and they can change they can change your brain waves to where you can have hallucinations and whatnot. So I was just thinking maybe that's just, I don't know a lot about I heard about the RFID chip, but I've read a lot of technology where they were saying that, you know, the brain can be tricked. It can be, and that cell phone can be a device for that.
Has anybody heard or read that aluminum foil interferes with, that if you put aluminum foil in your wallet with your driver's license, that interferes with that strip?
I've heard that.
On your driver's license and in your passport?
I know anything that has an electronic, like, for instance, like eel skin, that's why lots of times credit card companies tells you not to use like an eel skin wallet, because it demagnetizes the credit card, so it would not be able to scan. So that might be an article that you might want to use for your driver's license and anything that you don't want to be scanned, that you are not going to be swiping through one of their card readers.
I just thought about interfering with the satellite tracking. But it's impossible. That's why you've got to go underground in Gorilla. Ooh, ooh, ooh.
It's almost next to impossible, because even with your cars, the newer cars that you have now, they have ways of tracking your vehicle. So it's almost impossible to get out the grid if you want to use transportation by gas, because everywhere that you go now, most places don't accept cash. You have to have a debit card or credit card or something in order to swipe to purchase gas, especially if you're purchasing it at night. You're not going to go into the stores, and most of these stores are closed anyway, so you just use the pump and swipe the card. And that's how they're keeping the satellites, keeping track of you to know exactly what time, what location, where you purchase things.
I got to say, I think it sounds strange to be, and, you know, people disagree, but it sounds strange to be on a public radio program talking about keeping secrets from the people who got access to the most information.
Well, I think Mr. Fuller says no secrets. I think it's proved that we can't keep a secret from anybody.
I mean, if more than one person know it, it's not a secret.
It's not a secret. Plus, yeah, we are their network anyway. You're using their cell phones, their internet, their Blog Talk Radio show, so people are listening and recording. So
their MacBook Pro.
That's true. They could contact Apple to have to keep it on track on you, Gus.
For sure.
Hey, Pam, you know how you were saying that? You know, when someone says something that in the future actually ends up being true, coming true, that you pay attention? Mm-hmm. Didn't you say something like that earlier?
Yeah, I did. Uh-huh. Referred to Lindsay Williams.
Kathleen Kennedy Schlossberg wrote a book in 1986-87 called The End of Privacy. Anybody read that?
No.
No.
The End of Privacy by Kathleen Kennedy Schlossberg. And she, this book is all about the ways that America, and this is pre-9/11, that Americans were giving up their rights to privacy knowingly and unknowingly. And I would recommend people find that book and read it, because so much of what she was writing about has come true, especially with the Patriot mm-hmm. Act and all the security theater.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'd agree. I haven't read that book yet, but I've known what Bush was doing like all along. I got into watching politics because of Bush. Actually.
Yes, the best.
I mean, what does privacy mean? I mean, if it's going to be the end of privacy, what does it? Because I've definitely heard arguments a lot of what is it? You know, giving up your privacy, having cameras all over your city, those X-ray machines where you have to walk through in the airport where they, you know, basically, you know, you see your whole, you know, your body and all that stuff. So, yeah. Well, I guess it would be interesting, whoever wants to read it, to understand, like, what does privacy really mean? And how is it beneficial to you to, you know, have privacy?
I don't think it's privacy. I think it's more of the right to privacy that's probably been probably the bigger picture out of it, because everyone has the right to privacy that's being violated by the federal government. So, you know, this is an active violation of the Constitution and of the law. So, you know, I mean, and there's been no answers. There's no answer that's good enough. There's no answer. It's just, they've just done what they wanted without any repercussion. Mm-hmm.
On the giving your social security number, you know, your social security number is not supposed to be used for anything except employment. But how many different things, situations have you been in where you've been asked your social security number and you just give it out? That's one area. The other areas, have you gone shopping and they want to ask what your phone number is, and you go and you're paying cash? Well, your phone number is a database.
Yeah. I always make some
card, shopping card, too.
Yeah. That.
You don't have to give them your real number. That's what I always do when I go to these stores and they ask for a phone number. I just make one up off the top of my head and give it to them.
I ask them why.
Yeah, I've done that. I know Radio Shack, man. It seems like you went in there and buy a couple of batteries, man. They was asking for your phone number and
mm-hmm.
everything, you know. And these little cards that you get for, like, you know, a market or something that's supposed to, you know, give you some type of discount. But
man, all that's just data mining, just data mining, data mining, data mining. They know what your likes are. I mean, it's just interesting. I don't know, but I just find it extremely interesting. I mean, I know that the information that they get is going to be used against us. I know that much. But like, what do you do to protect yourself or whatever? I guess that's the part I'm not too clear on.
What you were speaking earlier about your Social Security number supposed to be used only for employment. Some states, your Social Security number, your driver's license number, some of the older driver's license, it's your Social Security number. Because I know my husband here in the state of Georgia, his Social Security number is his driver's license number.
Wow. I've never seen that. I didn't know they did that. I thought
they
were always two different numbers.
They used to do that in Virginia as well. Your Social Security number would be your driver's license number, but they then began making it optional, so you could get a different number, but that was like information you had to ask okay, you don't have to get your Social Security number on. I'm a big supporter. I try to encourage non-white people being stingy about giving out information. I make it a habit to not put out accurate information when I'm supposed to be filling out stuff for anything, like grocery cards. I'm just, not trying to give white people information. I mean, I'm not talking about a job application or anything like that, but just anything that's frivolous that I'm filling out. I mean, no, I'm not doing that online anywhere. Phone number, zip code, anything. Like, really make an effort to be stingy. And even with enforcement officers, there have been times where I just asking questions and getting more informed, where I know under certain situations you can ask questions, and at least the rules that white people have say that you do not have to divulge your name to enforcement officers under certain situations. If you're not doing anything incorrect, if you're not a suspect, then you don't have to identify yourself. That changes depending on what state you are and all that. But at least that's what they say. I'm not saying that's always the best thing to do, but at least that is, white people have said that. They've written it down in certain parts of the world. And just asking questions, I've been able to even not give enforcement officers my name when questioned, because I wasn't doing anything. I wasn't a person of interest. So, just that, do I even have to identify myself? And he finally said no, and am I free to go? End of discussion. So I would say really just try and make an effort of being stingy about giving out information to people and asking questions, really paying attention to if you have to, is this a law? Am I obligated to give you this information?
Good to know what some laws are.
I do that too, as far as information. Yeah, as little as possible when it comes to just about anything, especially to do anything with a white person.
I do that as well. That law you were talking about is called the Fifth Amendment, the right not to self-incriminate, which means that that's how a lot of cops prosecute a lot of black men and non-white people. What they do is they don't ask you questions. What they do is give you commands, such as a dog. A dog will obey commands that you give it. So officers are trained to talk to non-white people and give them commands instead of ask questions. License and registration, pull over, get out of the car. These are commands. These are not questions. So what happens is that you wind up giving the officer information about yourself when they ask you for your license and registration, even though you haven't broken the law. That when they run your information, you therefore just incriminated yourself, because you willingly surrendered information to the officer, even though there's no ATV, even though there's no warrant for your arrest signed by any judge, even though there's no wrongdoing at all. So what they get away with is you committing actual self-incrimination by surrendering any piece of information that you do to the officer because of the command that he gives, not because of the question that he asks, because you can always refuse to answer a question, but a command is something different, and that's what they get away with. If you think about a report that's, you know, a police report, you know, after a shooting of a black man, what they'll say is, I told him to stay still, or I told him to this and that. And then they'll say, he didn't listen, and then I shot him. So they're trained to use commands, and non-white people are supposed to be subjected to those commands, even though the police actually work for non-white people. Non-white people are the taxpayers. They work for the state. That's taxpayer money. But we don't work for the state. We are the taxpayers paying the state to employ the police officers. So even though we don't work for the state, they're giving us commands as if they own us, and they don't. But that's what white supremacy is. It's a mentality that states that we give you this title of authority over all non-white people, except for white people, which we see time and time and time again, because they get away with absolutely everything. And there is no law enforcement investigating all white people. There's not a single unit out there investigating the crimes that all white people commit.
Gus, you might want to have you had a show on about a year or so ago where you had on this person who was giving information what to do if you were stopped by law enforcement. Perhaps you might want to do a part two follow-up to that.
Oh, yeah.
It's also got to be on a basis of, you know, depending on the circumstances. I would suggest that, you know, you play it by ear when dealing with the police as a non-white person. You better, you know, you really got to kind of play, judge the situation on an individual basis.
Yeah. And I know that Patriot Act, that Patriot Act changed a lot of things. I mean, it basically just given the police department carte blanche to do what they want. And they like, oh, it's the Patriot Act. You know, don't you need a warrant? Nope, Patriot Act. Okay.
The Patriot Act was 1,200 pages. Do you realize that in 1,200 pages within, right after 12/11 and 9/11, they produced this 1,200-page document? No. That's been sitting on the shelf waiting for an opportunity.
Which is a good time to have someone with a legal background to get on the show who can go over the Patriot Act as to what exactly where we stand as a group of people under Homeland Security / Patriot Act.
They sell it. It's a bound copy. You can buy it at bookstore, Amazon. It's at the library.
Prisoners in a prison.
But true, it's a global prison complex. So they can issue a warrant for you, and they can pick you up any part of the globe, and they can rendition you and just put you in a secret cell and just keep you there indefinitely without having to Mirandize you. Or they could say you're enemy combatant or Homeland Security of the nation. That's why they picked you up, and they don't have to. You wouldn't fall under the rules of engagement for you to have to be read your Miranda warning.
Hey, there's only 30 seconds. I'm out. Rasta is the way.
Let's just see how many Mark Twain moments we can have and share them with each other next time. Here are Mark Twain moments.
Are you
every day of my life.
Anybody on the line familiar with
Malcolm
Gomez?
He'd be proud of us if he could hear us.
Heard of what?
Maladoma Somme.
What is that?
Oh.
He's a person. He he's a West African male, and he's very interesting. I mean, he talks about spirituality in a way that I haven't ever heard before, and it's you know, I don't know if Gus could get him on the show, but I mean, the way he talks about it, for me, it made a lot of sense to me. How he talks about so-called spirituality and the ancestors and whatnot. Yeah, so if you guys just look him up, he has some interviews on YouTube, and see what you think. And if you think, you know, if you think it's any good, maybe we can have him on the show.
How do you spell his name?
Do you spell it?
Oh, good.
Yes. Are you guys ready?
Yeah.
Malidoma, that's Malidoma, and Some is spelled Some.
Malidoma. All right.
If someone can email that spelling to me, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
I finally got a chance to hear Dr. Francis Cress Welsing's debate against Dr. Shockley over his theory of black genetic inferiority and her theory on white genetic annihilation, and as well as all of her other speeches on it. And I found all of that information to be very, very enlightening.
She was excellent. I mean, I think he went into hiding after that. I think he, the superior person, went into hiding. Huh?
Did you see where he held, like, the flashcards? He was talking about dysgenics and black people being so retarded, and then he, like...
Oh, my God.
Flashcards upside down.
Yeah. Had them little cards talking about 5.3% of, like, black people and white people and all this. It was completely crazy. And he had no background in genetics. No background.
Yeah,
none.
He pretty much humiliated. Yeah. He pretty much proved her theory that he wasn't superior. Because he disappeared after that, I think. I don't think you heard too much from him after that. Yeah, at least I don't think you did. Because she wiped the floor up with him.
That was impressive.
Yes, have you ever done a show on transhumanism?
No.
That would be interesting. That actually go right along with white genetic annihilation and their fear. Is anybody familiar with transhumanism?
No.
No.
Well, transhumanism is basically what white people are trying to institute. They call it evolving. They're going to evolve themselves. Basically turn themselves into robots so they can live on. It's really interesting. And really the spokesperson about transhumanism that's online is actually a non-white person by the name of Michio Kaku.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Michio Kaku, theoretical physicist. Okay, I know what you're talking about now.
If you really look into transhumanism, that really...
Yeah.
That really goes in line with white genetic annihilation and their fear of them not being able to stick around, so they feel like they have to, you know, put themselves in robots. And that's the reason why the microchips are coming about. Not necessarily just to track people, but if you actually have a microchip within you, that's the way to control a person, and that's how it just starts.
Yeah, I'm actually a big fan of Michio Kaku. He's really smart. He really knows what he's talking about. I've seen most of his lectures. Never a dull moment. I understand every word that he's picking out. He's very, very brilliant.
Speaking of science writers, I've always heard the name Octavia Butler. I'm not a big fan of sci-fi. And I know, Gus, you always ring your cocktail a few times. So could you tell me who this Octavia Butler person was? Because I believe she's passed on.
Yes, she did.
She did. She's a black female. She's black female. She passed away recently. within the last 5 years or so. She wrote quite a bit of fiction, sci-fi, and she wrote about racism. She wrote like science fiction on racism, which is, I mean, it's kind of wild. But I think the book that she's best known for is Kindred. And maybe we should do a program on Kindred. I almost feel like I don't want to do it because I feel like everybody read that. I guess that's why you should do it, because everybody's read that. Anyway, the short and simple of it, black female is poor and doesn't have anything, a la black Jim, nigger Jim, excuse me. She gets into a sexual relationship with a white man. And somehow she goes back in time, and she's on a plantation, and she meets this little white boy. It is Mark. Jesus, I'm not even talking about this anymore, but it is Mark Twain. She goes back. She is Nigger Jim. She goes back in time, taking care of a white child. It's Nigger Jim, and I'm all Nigger Jimmed out for one day and taking care of white children. So we won't be doing Octavia Butler anytime soon, but maybe that one. Yes, we can do the camp.
She wrote... She was one of the few African-American science fiction writers, and Kindred is definitely worth the read.
Oh, and she was here, too. She was here in Washington State. I didn't even know I was that close to where she was until recently. But, yeah, she lived here. And Kindred, I think a lot of classrooms use Kindred, I suspect, because it is so similar to Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer and all that. But I think it's taught in a lot of schools, and it centers around a black female having sex with a white guy. And I think at one point, at any rate, we'll do it down the road. No time. We'll do it by next month. We'll do it by next month.
She died of a brain aneurysm. And I believe she was in a tragic relationship.
Really?
Yeah.
The work shouldn't surprise you. It does not surprise me at all. Everything makes crystals. Everything is clear now. Everything is clear.
Wow. I have no idea.
Would anybody like a microchip planted in their brain where they can just download books straight to the brain? Or anything like that? I mean, is that something to look forward to? Anybody on the line?
No. Absolutely not.
I don't even want to implant birth control.
You don't know, like your learning ability is basically in an active real-time clock, meaning when you read a book, you don't read the entire book. You never read all the words on the pages. You only read them for like maybe a millisecond before you move on to the next word. The thing that most sticks up to you is what you remember about any book that you've read, meaning that's how you are the way you are, because you learn only certain things from the book that nobody else did. So a complete download would almost be, you know, there's no room in your brain for that. That's not how your brain's going to work.
Well, I mean, I don't know
that's
about
that. That's the transhumanism that I was talking about. That's exactly
that's what I'm saying. That's why. Dr. Kaku was explaining as well. We don't read. We only read. We can read every word in the dictionary. We're only going to remember not even a third. So we only even use even less than that in our everyday speech. So, I mean, to download a book, you know, with all of the words and the context, you know, it's unnecessary. It's overkill, literally.
Well, I'm finding all the books I want to read on Kindle, they don't have, so I can't download them into a machine.
Yeah, I wanted to veer back because I feel like we are venturing from the path, but I did want to say just from what I have been taught by racists, in psychology, you do remember everything is captured. You don't forget anything. You just have a retrieval problem, and I've seen evidence that that could be correct. that you actually don't forget anything. So when you read, you do have all that information stored. You just might not be able to access it. But I've even seen experiments where this can be demonstrated, where you have savings and learning. That's the term that white people use. They can flash something on your eyeball, and you won't even be conscious that it flashed across your eyeball, and people will show that they saw it. Like they can answer questions that you would need the information that was flashed on their eyeball, and people will be able to answer the question. So I suspect the mind probably works and does a lot of things that we won't be able to fully understand until white supremacy is wrapped up. So that's why I'd like to get back to that. The person that called in at 967, and I could be wrong, be very clear about that, because I've been very confused by racism, white supremacy, and the people who gave me the information, I suspect they were racist because they were white. The person that dialed in at 9674, did you have a question or comment?
This is 818. I'm listening to you all. I tuned in a little late. I'm driving. I just wanted to say hello because I miss you all.
818. I was going to ask about you.
I've been out of the loop for a minute, but I still tune in and catch the archives and download them when I can.
You doing okay?
Excuse me?
You doing all right?
Oh, yeah, I relocated, so making some adjustments.
Rock on.
How is I'm sorry?
I'm listening. Go ahead.
How is the dog?
I'm sorry. You said, how is the dog? He relocated to a different city so he could live a more luxurious lifestyle.
Oh. Take that. Wow.
Thanks for asking.
For sure. Good to hear from you. It's great.
Go ahead.
Are you in the same state?
Yes, I'm still in California.
Okay.
Just a more rural area, not as congested, so.
Oh, that's good. Good.
Yeah, so it's a little trouble online and being able to access things as regularly as I did before. But I was able to call in. I was like, I sure miss calling in and being able to listen to a whole show like live, so I'm able to do that now.
How do you like being in a less congested area?
It's quieter, but everything is really far away, and services and access to things are kind of limited. So in that way, it sucks, but it's given me a chance to better prepare myself financially, so that's a relief.
Okay.
I'm still trying to figure out how to introduce counter-racism to non-white people without having conflict and them getting upset at you.
End up comedy.
I don't know if I'm a comedian.
Well, that's I mean, honestly, that's what I do. I mean, I make racist jokes and comparisons all the time. I talk about white people in their face all the time.
Well, my thing is to get non-white people to be receptive. Those that I know around me, I'm finding a lot of them have that mechanism to want to defend white people even when they're not around. But I know there's probably background noise because I'm on the freeway and it's windy out here, so you can mute me, Gus, and I'll keep listening.
Do you got a sample of a joke?
Oh. One that I've done lately. That background noise is getting to me.
Double joke.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. No, I haven't done it lately, so I haven't written any new material. My old material was dying out. I thought it was pretty funny.
Hello?
I wonder how a routine like that would go over. What was the reaction of people when you did it?
It hit and it misses sometimes. Like, there were some nights that I went and just talk about movies and how crazy white people are and, you know, how the men always spend so much time, you know, trying to get their dick bigger. I said, you know, try planting it in Miracle-Grow or something and, you know, wait a couple of months and see what happens. And then, you know, I started, you know, laying out some other material like that. I started talking about their pornography, how it's all weird and stuff like that. And a couple of it would, you know, hit and a couple of it missed because, you know, there were a lot of, there were more white people in the audience than there were non-white. So, you know, the reaction didn't mainly come from the white audience. It came from the non-white audience. So I kind of felt the energy from the non-white people, and I got off of that, and then some white people started warming up to it a little bit. Mm-hmm. So it hits and it misses.
Your switchboard must be closed, Gus, because that's a couple of cowbells at least.
Is there a comedian, I don't know, I just wonder, is there a comedian that has been successful at making non-white people aware of racism in a constructive way?
Paul Mooney.
Mm. Yeah.
Paul Mooney. That is who I've been listening to for the past 3 years. That's why I was aware of white supremacy and racism in the first place. That's why I was aware that the only way to actually talk about it to white people in a non-threatening way was through stand-up comedy.
Cal Bell.
Know that? Hello?
I think Paul did have some constructive routines, though. And a lot of what he said was pretty accurate. But Calvin,
you guys like Paul Mooney? You think he's pretty effective?
I think he's really effective.
I think he can. Can I be heard?
Less confused.
Yes.
Hello?
Mm-hmm. Hello?
I think Paul Mooney can be effective. I had the opportunity to have coffee with him one Saturday morning in L.A., and he talks about white people, but he's kind of loud, and he talks openly. I noticed a white guy about two tables over. He wouldn't say anything to Paul Mooney, but he was listening, and I saw him chuckling and laughing. But Paul Mooney was, like, really roasting white people and the kind of stuff they do. But the guy wouldn't come up and say anything to him, but he was laughing. I think maybe it's because a lot of it was true. But I think he can be really effective because he doesn't seem like he's afraid, you know, to say anything, whatever on his mind, he doesn't seem like he's afraid to say it.
Sometimes I think white people just tolerate stuff because they know it's really not going to result in any constructive action. So when black people, make fun of white people or, you know, whatever, I mean, when the end of that comedy routine or that joke, white people are still going to be doing what white people do. So I don't think they're really all that concerned about black people's telling jokes or talking about them. I think they're more concerned about what are we going to do. So I don't think they really care whatsoever what we say.
I mean, it's kind of like poking fun at, you know, them practicing racism. So, I mean, at the same time, they're laughing because it's like, oh, well, you're joking about this. And you know,
it's harmless.
We're doing it.
Right, it's harmless.
That's
at the end of the day,
right,
no black comedian is going to affect their life. You know, no black comedian is going to stop them from getting a home, from getting a job, from being able to get justice. There's no black comedian on the planet that has the power to stop one single white person from doing anything they want to do. So what do they care?
If white people are laughing or clapping, you know, that's not going in the right direction.
Yeah, you're entertaining. You're like a monkey. No disrespect, but, you know, I mean, you're entertaining. You know, it's not a threat to them. You know, we think we can hurt the white supremacists, not the refined white supremacists. You're not hurting their feelings because they know when you leave that place or that club or whatever, you're going to do what they tell you to do. They don't care what
you're
going to
do about it. Besides making jokes about it.
Well, at the end of the day, it is stand-up comedy. I mean, I am there to make people laugh and entertain, but I'm also there to make them think and to make them laugh while they're laughing and they're thinking about the things that I'm saying. Now, some of the things I may say and the way I say it is in a funny manner, but everything I say is true.
You're trying to really reach the non-white people.
All of them, because all of them are the ones that respond to it the most.
Okay.
So that's why I'm able. That's why it's so successful, and it hits, and then sometimes it misses.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really
have
just
heard,
like a craft. It's not easy.
Have you heard the Kamau Bell show or Kevin? I forgot his name. W. Kamau Bell. Have you heard? Have you heard of that guy?
No, I never heard of him.
Okay, he was on the Cows. Check that out. He's a stand-up comic.
Oh, yeah. He's on YouTube.
Oh, okay. No, I'll look him up.
I had an interesting experience recently, and this is kind of a joke, but I came out of like the shadows of something. It was in the dark, and a white person said, "Oh, you scared me," and I said, "Good."
Wow. You know, I was just thinking about a concept about white genetic annihilation when I was hearing her Dr. Frances Cresswell sings speeches on everything. And I thought to myself, if you explain what's going on, I mean, if you take a white canvas, the only way a white canvas can stay white is if no color gets on it. But if you put a black dot in the middle, you know, it ceases to be a white canvas. You know, if you take a black canvas and you put a white dot in the middle, it's still going to be a black canvas with a white dot. No matter how many white dots you put on a black canvas, it's still going to be a black canvas. And on a white canvas, even the smallest color on it, it's no longer white.
I've seen a Richard Pryor roast where he said that Richard Pryor said that the first homosexual experience he ever had was Paul Mooney.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
I just wanted to get a quick plug in since it's on topic. Actually, I'll make a request. I don't even have the program entered, but there are actually two programs tomorrow. There's one in the evening tomorrow as well with a black female who was adopted by two white so-called lesbians. And they made a documentary film about her experience. And I think Non-Mighty Wick caught this film. Can you tell them a little bit about what they should expect based on what you saw in the film?
Yeah, let me see if I can remember. It was anti-sexual white females. They adopted some non-white children. I guess one, a boy. A boy that looked like he might have had a white parent, and then the other anti-sexual female had adopted a black female and then, you know, raised them. And then they ended up adopting another non-white boy a little later. It was a black female, the one who was the only girl that they had. And, she ended up wanting to be around black people for the most part. And that, you know, is, from what I could tell, her parents or adopted the people who removed her, they were kind of had to go along with it, but it seemed to cause problems. And you know, it was an interesting flick. I mean, I don't want to spoil the interview or whatever, but I'm sorry.
Well, listen.
I'm sorry. Did somebody say something? Okay. Yeah.
No. Go ahead.
Yeah, it was an interesting documentary. It should be a quality show.
I was going to ask you, is this adoption, is it one of them, one child was Asian, one of the older boy, I believe, he had a white parent, and the girl had a mother.
Yes.
Right.
Oh, yeah, I remember I saw that on PBS, yes, when she was having issues with her mother, and because her mother, the relationship with her biological mother, it caused her to be, she was a track star.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, okay, yes. I believe she went to Delaware State, that's where she ended up going to school, HBCU. Okay, it should be interesting.
Just
I know the only thing I think it was one thing that confused me in the video was just at the end or near the end they said that she was pregnant and then it didn't seem to kind of resolve if she ended up I guess remaining pregnant or not. Did anybody did either of you two get clear on that?
No, she terminated
because the was a black male. I believe he was African. His parents was from on the continent that she was involved with sexually. And she did terminate it because she was a track star, and she did, yeah. Because at the end of the movie...
The white females were... I thought they colluded and made her having the abortion quite attractive. Made it very easy and reasonable sounding.
I noticed one part when, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. It was one of those shows that I watched where it just showed how easily these children were speaking. They were teaching them the Hebrew dialect because both of the parents, they were of Jewish religion.
Yeah.
And she was teaching the children how to speak Hebrew. And they were taking Hebrew lessons, but they were taught nothing about the African culture. It was all about the Jewish culture.
Yeah, I noticed that too. That did seem real strange. And I know it caught the taller white lady, the one who looked, with the blonde, closer to blonde hair. I know when the camera was on her at one point, and the other lady was talking to the daughter and said something to her like, I think, your biological mom, still cares about you or something like that, trying to comfort her because she hadn't heard from her biological mom. And as soon as she said that, the other white lady made this face like, yeah, whatever, it totally bugged her to hear that, that she's talking about the other black female, I guess the daughter's biological mother in a caring way like that.
Yeah, I remember. I recall one of those white females saying, "Well, where are her mothers? What? Where are her mothers? We don't know. She got an attitude because this young black woman wanted to connect with her black family."
Yep. You're right, because she took it. She had a very nasty attitude about, I guess they felt put upon that they raised this girl. Now all of a sudden she's going to reject the whiteness and go towards black.
I think a lot of these transracial adoptions that, they have these non-white babies, and they love the babies, but when these babies become, independently thinking individuals, then there's issues, and then there's been damage done. And I'd be very interested in how this young woman has, what kinds of things she's done to repair, what she thinks the harm has been and what she's done to repair it.
Did y'all catch that? I think one of her close, classmates or pals was in the same situation. She was a non-white female and was adopted by two white anti-sexual females.
Yep.
It made me feel like that was, must be a common thing. The black female ended up mentioning too. She's like, yeah, I don't have any problem. People can love who you love and love the way you want to love, thumbs up. She already had that down.
It's absolutely disgusting. As I've said repeatedly, I get it sickens me to see that people give up their right to have children, but yet they want to come out here and take children into a situation that is abnormal to warp their sense of identity.
They're creating double agents.
I mean, would you rather have them in foster care?
If I had to choose between foster care and two gay people, I would choose foster care.
If we had justice, we would be able to take care of our own children. There'd be no reason for them to be in foster care. So still, the fault of white people that there are even not so many non-white children that aren't able to have their parents and natural parents care for them.
Yeah, right on.
So
that's the argument they try to make, is that, well, at least they're not in foster care,
But, you know, how can they really love the children and hate the adult version? And I don't say hate, but how can, you know, I mean, you adopt these non-white children and then you practice white supremacy. How sick is that?
Yep.
So I would say, you know, I don't say the child's better off with nobody, but I still question the motivation of people who are practicing white supremacy and will practice it when their child is grown and will know that this is going to be practiced against this non-white child they claim to love. Hey, I don't know what kind of love that is.
I mean, they get us involved in these arguments, man, that are, you know, not even a point. It's, like you said, it's not, you know, foster care or lesbian care. It's, you know, racism, white supremacy, you know, that's the point. But they get
us
involved.
You know, they've always taken our children. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
You know what it reminds me of?
Taking our children, you know.
Uh-huh. Pam, you know what it reminds me of when you said, how could they love the baby version but hate the grown-up version? It just made me think of how people are, especially with puppies. They want the puppy when it's little and cute and it does all this cute stuff. But then when it gets older, they abandon them. They stop taking care of them. They give them away. Like when you go to the shelter, you find a shelter full of adult dogs that nobody will adopt. They can get an adult German Shepherd for $86, but they'll bid to $800 for a German Shepherd puppy. Because I think maybe it's the idea of molding and shaping a little defenseless black person who's, you know, not going to talk back to you, not challenge you on practicing racism, white supremacy. It's kind of like it can be an experiment. You know, you can be like Sandra Bullock and love the smell of his little baby pee. But what are you, she said that in the People interview, but what are you going to do when they get grown and they face challenges and issues as victims of racism?
You know what I think, too? I think, and this may sound strange, but I think that white genetic survival, the increasing infertility of white females, white people, but particularly white females, because they're the ones that get pregnant, and I think that it's a psychological, it's a coveting. They covet what we have. I think they want to basically take black women's place. They want to put black women in the closet, be in the they had a commercial on television, and it was some crazy something. I think it was some clothing commercial. It was the weirdest thing. They had a black guy in a dressing room. It looked like a woman's dressing room, and there was nothing in there, I think, but women. And he was taking off his shirt, and this white female sees him take off his shirt, and, you know, he exposes his chest. She loses her mind, goes over to him, and behind, you know, in the camera, in view of the camera, watching all this is a mixed race-looking black female who is watching all this go down, and she's folding clothes. And I thought that was making a very powerful statement, that the white female is attempting to commandeer the black male and the black child, particularly the black male child, and let the black woman sit there and do the domestic duties or just be invisible. So I think that given that they are becoming more infertile, I think their dislike and envy of black women is increasing, and I think it's their attempt by taking black children, I think it's very symbolic, particularly dark-skinned children and dark-skinned black male babies. I think something very symbolic is going on. I think it's very psycho-centered, and I think that it has less to do with wanting to help a helpless child and more to do with fulfilling some mandate of white supremacy, of taking people's children, of creating advocates and people that will help them promote white supremacy when their numbers decline, but also just pushing the black woman out, making her the monster mother, pushing her out of the picture of black men's lives and black children's lives, and supplanting herself as the ideal white, as the ideal mother figure. That's what I think.
They didn't have
that
a toy.
Real sick. Huh?
The toy. I said they have some toys. You know, I think I read a report where it was a racist male. He had adopted a black young person, and he had I think he ended up doing some, you know, ended up molesting him on the internet, like on camera and stuff like that. And some of the things he was saying was that, you know, as he was getting older, it was getting more difficult to deceive and manipulate him. And so, you know, it's, they want to have toys, and then too, as they get older, they prefer them younger, of course, because people are easier to deceive, you know, when they're younger and less experienced, things of that nature.
Well, you know, they used to buy us outright. Now they just adopt us. So perhaps it's a desire to return to owning black people, to controlling, totally controlling black people. You know, it may sound sick, but, I mean, this whole thing is sick. You know, you're taking people's children. You know, I mean, Madonna could have easily given that African village $10,000